The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
We're back. It's the Deadcast. I'm Drew. That's Roth. And Roth, we have something very special we need to talk about today. You ready?
I don't know. What is it?
I speak, of course, of Kafkazi.
Oh, it's terrible. I'm not ready to talk about it.
Sorry?
I said I'm not ready to talk about it, but now I'm ready. It's okay. Yeah, sorry. Don't worry about it.
I thought you meant that from a technical standpoint.
Oh, no.
Like, I'm not ready to talk about it. My microphone switched off. My microphone itself mourned Kevin Durant's Achilles tendon. And
it's like one of those emotional sorts of readinesses. It's like when think about this every time I see like one of those, like a Cialis commercial where they're like, ask your doctor if your heart is healthy enough for sex. And I'm like, do you mean like, you mean emotionally, like if you're ready to commit again? And like go back and try to love.
I love that any man would ask that either.
Yeah,
no. It would be less. Demand your to your doctor that you are ready for sex.
I'll find somebody else who'll tell me that my terrible swollen hot dog heart is ready for sex. Anyway,
yeah.
Anyway, let's.
My heart's good, right? It's okay. Even if the doctor was like, "We really advise you not to do it," you'll have a fucking heart attack. You'd be like, "No, I'm ready. Yeah. I'm ready to play." Yeah.
You know what? I know the risks. All right, so
send me out there, Steve Kerr. All right, so we'll go through everything that happened because this was game 5 in Toronto, a game that the Raptors should have won and blew it with a remarkably ill-advised timeout with just over 3 minutes left, which allowed Golden State to make a run and take the lead. And Draymond Green literally said that, yeah, we needed that timeout. Thanks for that, Nick Nurse. Anyway.
It's amazing how badly it worked for Toronto, too. They came out of it and they just played like the 76ers. It was like not great.
They really did.
Like they couldn't even get a shot.
They didn't seem to have any set offense at all. They were just sort of fucking around and sort of dribbling their way, you know, dribbling the clock down and then just launching any god-awful shot that they could. Right after Kawhi Leonard seemed to put a fucking stranglehold on the game with like two insane threes.
I felt like I do not have enough throw weight to make an impact in a game like this. But I compared Kawhi to Michael Jordan in Slack right before they called the timeout and everything went to hell. And I kind of stand by that. It was as close as I've seen anybody play like Michael Jordan in taking over a game in the playoffs. Like it was crazy the run he was on. The idea that you would then like pull the emergency brake on that so you could get everybody together and be like, you're doing great. And I just wanted you to know that I'm proud of you. Like it's ridiculous to me.
Yeah, it was weird. I mean, I would say that just stylistically, whenever I watched Kobe Bryant, he patterned his mannerisms deliberately, I believe, after
two. Oh, yeah, so, yeah.
So watching him, and plus he has 5 rings to show for it, so watching him was evocative of Jordan without being like, it felt like, I don't know, it felt like turkey ham that you buy at the store.
You know? Yeah, like a really good textured soy protein experience. It definitely had, had the Jordan
passable
vibe,
imitation.
Even if it didn't like feel quite as inevitable.
Yeah, so Kawhi had his own sort of, he has his own style, but he did have that sort of imposition of will on some of these games that has been very, very reminiscent and enough to make you be like, oh,
yeah.
You know. Even though I just watched LeBron James go to the finals for a fucking decade.
Yeah, somehow this is like, it's newer. Like, this is another guy, so it's cool when he does it. I mean, like,
also, I didn't see him last year.
Yeah. It's like, I think it's a little bit more pleasing to watch than like postseason LeBron can be very much like a hammer hitting a nail, you know? Whereas like with Kawhi, like some of those threes that he was hitting maybe like 3 minutes before the game ended were incredible. Like, I mean, in their way as incredible as any of Steph's shit. But anyway.
I agree with that. And it wasn't also, you know, you watch LeBron play and drag a team to the finals and it seems like he succeeds in spite of his teammates. And I don't get that feel when I'm watching Kawhi, even though some of his teammates turn into complete puds, like you never know when Kyle Lowry will turn into John Starks. Just,
I know.
Like bad John Starks on a whim.
He was so great for most of the game yesterday. But somebody pointed out, too, like he had that, obviously his shot at the end of the game was blocked. And there was still some dispute about whether it was blocked or not. And that was all, somebody made this point on Slack, that was like Kyle Lowry hangover, where they're like, oh yeah, shot the ball behind the backboard by 4 feet. That's postseason Kyle. You know how that is? And it was like clearly deflected. It's just like, you know, you're used to some weird bad thing happening there. I think he's played
remarkably
great.
Inconsistent. Yeah. It's just shocking.
He and Marc Gasol have both been so good in this series, and yet, like, well, anyway, none of this is the story of game five, so...
No, it's not. The story, and it's amazing that it's almost inconvenient that the Warriors won because the Raptors had won, and I was rooting for them. I didn't like how that game ended, although I think I'm in the minority. I think people wanted more of the series, but I wanted Toronto to win and seal the deal. But if Toronto had won, it would have really everything that happened with Durant in the first half of that game would have been the lingering storyline. And it'll still linger through the series no matter how it ends.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it'll impact next year. It's like,
yeah, it will. It will. It'll linger because we presume he tore his Achilles. Did we confirm?
No one knows yet. He's apparently. So we're recording the day after the game, and so he's like coming to New York to be evaluated and probably to get surgery. Whatever. It's hard to say what it is, but it's clearly like if it's related to his Achilles, it's bad. You know. So it's a question.
Also,
of how
usually
bad
when
it is.
Because the report was that the Warriors fear that he has a torn Achilles, and they usually don't say that shit unless they know. Unless they grab his ankle and they're like, well, there's nothing there except like old linguine that's been cooked for 20 minutes.
That was like Billy and Giddy were saying that they actually watched the replay and that there's a little bit of a – like they thought they could see the Achilles rolling up, and like I'm not watching that shit to confirm it at all. Like my life is too short to see that happen. But like even if you're guessing at it
– I do love playing armchair doctor doing that.
Oh, right.
You know,
yeah.
I'm like, oh, that's an Achilles.
Yeah.
That's an Achilles.
Definitely like impacted his ubicular tendons.
Totally. Oh, that's a knee. That one's a knee. Saw it. There was a knee there.
Hate to see it. Hate to see a knee.
All right. So here, we'll just go. I'll just recap it because you already know it, but I'm going to recap it just for formality's sake. Durant suffered a calf injury 2 series ago, and it was, I think, diagnosed as a strained calf, even though it looked much more serious than that. He was held out for the entire Blazers series, which they swept the Blazers in 4 games. Then he was held out all the way through the first 4 games of this series, in which the Raptors went up 3-1, in which the Warriors visibly missed him. Yeah. And then he was put out onto the court for game 5. And Steve Kerr said after the fact that doctors said they didn't believe that he could do more damage to his leg if he played. It's like the NFL thing where it's like, it's a matter if you can tolerate the pain. Yeah. And so Durant goes out. He's brilliant in the first quarter. Just fucking brilliant. It's like he wasn't even hurt at all. And then he steps wrong and everything goes to shit and he falls down. And he was remarkably calm about it. Like, oh, well, that's it for me.
Hate to see that. It was pretty amazing. Like, and then I think it was Mark Jackson pointed out that like it was the guys that walked him back to the locker room were like, 2 of the 3 other most important players on the team.
Yeah, people currently playing. Yeah. They had a job to do.
Jeez.
So he goes down. First of all, we can't know, even though I'm going to go ahead and blindly assume, that the fact that he played on his bum calf, if that was the injury, is what caused him to presumably tear his Achilles afterward, if they sent him out, or if he and the Warriors collectively decided it was worth the risk to go out there, and it seemed to be worth the risk early on, but then clearly catastrophically not the case after that. And so what we're left with is this really weird shit where it's like, first of all, everyone last night acted like he had died.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it sucked to see him in pain and everything, but yeah, there was a lot of those tweets of being like, this is your fault. Like, I'm going to Tim Kawakami's house, which was bizarre. To me,
because Tim Kawakami of The Athletic wrote an article about how mysterious, because it was very weird. The Warriors were very vague about the injury in the beginning, and it seemed like it allowed speculation to sort of cultivate, especially among hot takers such as myself, where it's like, well, he's more hurt than they let on, or he's not, he's the injury isn't that severe, but he doesn't really want to play because he's got his free agency to, right. Impending free agency to worry about and shit like that. And so after he got hurt, and Tim Kawakami wrote an article in The Athletic that was sort of like this. It had this bit of speculation and then ended it with a kicker that, if this happened to Steph or to Clay or to Draymond, do you think they would not be on the court right now? Like that sort of tough guy shit, which is not a great
thing. No, it's also, I mean, it's tough because like, as you pointed out, like the fact that he's almost certainly leaving as a free agent. And then he's been, I mean, that's been like a story of the season, not the, but like one of the big stories that so clearly colors everything that it makes that sort of take, which is like, it's a type of shitty sports take that exists, right? Like it's always existed. And like the NBA is maybe the least prone to it, but every sport has it.
Yes.
That it makes that easier to kind of slip into because you're not just being like, oh, is he soft? Does he not care? Whatever. Which I mean, for where athletes are concerned is always bullshit as far as I'm concerned. It's also, it has that like element of loyalty or whatever, which like erodes whatever like empathetic impulse there would be to give the guy the benefit of the doubt.
Right. And Kawakami, I guess to his credit, spent all of last night essentially apologizing for the take.
Oh, yeah.
Even though all I did was issue a take. Who gives a shit?
Right, and it was
online were so like so aggrieved and being like, and especially Warriors fans, like our own former writer, the vile, disgusting Kevin Draper, who was like, "Well, I hope all you hot takers are happy with yourselves now. Not you killed a man."
Yeah, there was a lot of that. My friend Bethlehem Scholes, the same sort of thing, where he was sort of like, "I hope like you missed out on Pete KD because you're too busy calling him a bitch or whatever," and like, I don't even miss out on anything. Like for one thing, like I would not rule out the possibility that Kevin Durant makes another few All-Star teams. It's a very difficult injury to come back from, but like it's fucking Kevin Durant, man. It's different. And also like, yeah, he's going to live. Like and the Warriors are whatever. I don't know. It all felt bad. I think I would say that. And I understand why people reacted very dramatically to it because it sucked. Like, it seemed like things were going to get way more interesting, and then it got really sad because this guy is hurt.
It did. It got sad, and then there were Raptors fans who played the part of Eagles fans. They put on their best Eagles fans pants and clapped for the injury.
Oh, yeah.
And that made the crew mad on ESPN. That crew's fucking terrible. Yeah. They had a point. And so then I think people took their anger at the crowd out at, like, the rest of the internet that was enjoyably goofing on KD for being a cheesy asshole, like you can enjoy, part of the enjoying of an athlete's peak is also bitching about him if you don't like him.
Yeah. It's like, honestly, like you can't just, the idea that like you're just supposed to be like in this position of like reverence or opposition where it's concerned is like, these guys are weirdos. It's fine and perfectly normal to like laugh at the ways in which they're weird and to enjoy those. Like that's part of the fun.
So let's do our duty and actually talk about this like serious sports people. First of all, I want to know if you think personally that mistakes were made in how they handled Durant's injury, or if this couldn't have been prevented at all.
I mean, we're both guessing, but I'm going to guess anyway. It's just sort of a little caveat. Probably, yeah, I think so. I mean, I think just in the sense that it seems like that particular diagnosis, like he can't get hurt more, which is also the one that apparently that the trainers have given to Kevon Looney, who is in clearly in excruciating pain every moment that he's playing because he's got some dislodged cartilage in his ribs. I can't even imagine how much that fucking sucks. And he looked like he couldn't raise his right arm over his head for some portion of the game yesterday. Like,
yeah, and he's got smashed down to the floor when he was trying to grab a rebound once. It looked like his heart was going to fall out of his chest.
And so the thing that they said about him was that, like, this isn't going to get worse. Like, the cartilage is gone, baby. Let it go, And
right.
But that does sort of leave open the possibility of, like, so if this particular injury isn't going to get worse, that's one thing. But, like, there's other things. Everything is connected. The knee bone is connected to the leg bone, as you know. The idea that this calf injury would only be localized to his calf when there's all this other important stuff going on in a basketball player's leg, Like, that to me feels, obviously with the benefit of hindsight, feels irresponsible and wrong.
I would say that, except I think it's extremely normal for athletes to come back before they're ready because they want to.
Yeah.
Not only because of ego, but just because they want to play.
Right.
Like, it's just, that's what they do. That's what they're here for.
I agree with that. And I think that's part of what I found annoying about the sort of crazy reactive discourse yesterday was the idea that somehow, like, Kevin Durant was browbeaten into doing this by, like, a columnist for The Athletic and a dozen assholes on Twitter. Like, he's Kevin Durant. He's very competitive. Like, I'm sure he very much wanted to play. I don't think anybody made him do it.
I mean, if there's going to be any athlete who's going to be like, I'll show that one guy on Twitter, like,
yes,
it would be Kevin Durant.
Fair.
But I still don't believe that. I still believe Kevin Durant was like, I would really like to play. Mm-hmm. And the lawyers are like, we'd really like you to play too because we're getting our asses kicked. And so I don't think that that's at all uncommon. I just think the circumstances around the injury, given the speculation about what the injury actually was, what the fuck he's going to do after this, especially now, we can talk about that in a second, you know, his relationship with his teammates and the fact that they were down 3-1 to a team that was beating the brakes off of them and was not favored to do so. So I think all of that circumstantial shit elevated what is sort of a very common thing, particularly in football, where, you know, an athlete overextends himself. It ended up turning it into essentially a Shakespeare play.
Yeah, I mean, that is how these guys get hurt more. I mean, for all the fluky things where, like, it's just, you know, a lot of strain on the body to play this stuff, it reminded me, this is, you know, a terrible comparison or whatever, but, like, when Robert Griffin blew his knee out, that, like, he had been hurt earlier in the game, clearly had been hurt in that
yes,
playoff game against the Seahawks, which I was at, and then they left him out there for another couple of quarters on that terrible fucking piebald turf. And you were just kind of waiting for that moment, like, because you're clear that he's, like, halfway to something really bad. And then, you know, but, you know, the decision, if it's left up to him, like, he's probably going to bet that he doesn't go the other second, you know, part of the way.
Yeah, that was malpractice. I mean, that was just straight up malpractice.
Because of the field and everything.
There was no interlude.
Yeah.
And when he went down, it was not only inevitable, but it was just sort of like a basic collapse that could have happened to him on any play because he was out there.
Yeah. I mean, the real, like, the kill shot injury was, like, was it a non-contact thing? He dropped the ball, but then
he was in the pocket. I can't remember if it was contact or not. I'm not going to look it up.
Right. But it was weird.
I don't believe, like, no linebacker came smashing into his leg or anything.
Yeah.
Shit.
It was just that his knee was not game ready at that point. And with Durant, it's weird too, because he wasn't getting up and down the floor great in the first quarter, but Lord knows, he's still putting points on the board. I mean, he scored 11 points in 12 minutes or something like that. And, you know, to that degree, he looked like Kevin Durant. It's just like, and so it's hard to know, like, whether this was attrition or whether it was a fluke or whatever. I mean, we'll probably never know.
We'll never know. And I don't think there's a lot of incentive for any of the parties involved to, you know, especially if it does turn out they rushed him too soon. I don't think the Durant or the Warriors are all that incentivized to be like, yeah, we fucked up.
Right, right. Yeah, this isn't exactly like the Kennedy assassination or whatever, but, like, no one stands to gain anything from the truth coming out about this. Like, so everybody's just happy to charge it to the game and, like, talk about how sad it is.
Let's take a break and come right back and talk more finals. Yep.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
We're back. So last night or two nights ago, as this will post, not only did the Warriors win, they only won by a point, and yet they went 20-for-42 from the 3-point line, which is just completely fucking insane. So my question to you, Rob, is knowing that Durant is out, presumably for the rest of the series and a lot longer, do you think that the Warriors can still come back from that 3-1 deficit to win, given what you saw?
No, but 20-for-42 from 3-point range is insane, and any team that shoots like that has more than a puncher's chance at winning. I don't know that that's sustainable, although it's like, I mean, it's obviously not sustainable by any sort of historic norms, but they're also the fucking Golden State Warriors, so sure. I don't think so. I think the Raptors have been by far the better team, but the combination of how weird and sort of like cut off from everything else the game felt because of the injury and because of the weird circumstances and all that, plus the fact that the Raptors absolutely turned into a pumpkin during those like crucial last 3 minutes. Like, it's just enough that I'm nervous, but no, I don't think that they could blow this.
I actually agree with you, and I would have said that Durant's injury sort of casts a pall over the Warriors, because that's a very typical thing.
Oh, yeah.
Someone gets hurt, and you're down, and you're downtrodden, and so it shows up in your play, because you're demoralized. But right after Durant left that game last night, they went on a run.
Yeah.
So, and they were up by like 11 or something like that by the time they were done with the run. So it didn't seem like they were truly like so demoralized they couldn't even play. Yeah. So
I think it's the Warriors, honestly, like, game looked great in game four to me. Like, defensively, they looked just checked out. But like, they've played fine. It's just the Raptors are way good. Like, way better than I think I had assessed them as being. And they played brilliantly. Like, Kawhi's played as well in the postseason as I've ever seen anybody play. So like,
they're more than the sum of their parts. Yeah. Because you're like, well, oh, Fred VanVleet and Marc Gasol, you're like, this is not a very— this is a motley crew, as it
and
were.
I'd always thought of that as being like the definition of like shit that doesn't work in the playoffs. Like, for so long, they were a team that like had this really good bench, and that was like a big part of why they won so many games during the regular season, because there was no real drop off between the first unit and the second unit. But like, teams shorten their rotations in the postseason, so like, you kind of— it feels like you lose that advantage. And yet, like, all those guys like VanVleet and stuff like that, like, I think of him as a bench guy, but he's been essential.
Yeah, no, I agree. I mean, to me, it's like watching the Pistons upset the Lakers all those years ago with Ben Wallace and Hamilton and Chauncey Billups and all that stuff. So if the Raptors do finish it off, thank God for Kawhi, because otherwise you would get takes like, it's a team sport, like, which I hate.
Yeah.
I hate that. So, all right. So after the series is over, win or lose, Durant has two options. One is he can go into free agency. It's already been reported that he will get max contract offers regardless, even if he's out all of next season. But he can also— he has the option to trigger another year on his contract with Golden State that would keep him in Golden State doing rehab for like $30 million for another year. And then he goes into free agency, presumably healthier. So which should he do, and which will he do?
Ah, man. I mean, it's complicated. Obviously, right? I don't think there's any way that he triggers that option, but I think that like, that's probably the smart move. It's different when you're Kevin Durant, because it's not— he doesn't need to take what they call those like pillow contracts in baseball, where you like, you know, whatever, you give yourself a decent enough payday and you roll it over and then you hope to prove it the next year. Like, if he never played another basketball game, he'd go to the Hall of Fame. Like, so you don't need to stress over it. It's just like, until we know what the injury is, like, I'm still inclined to say that he'll go ahead and take his max deal and go wherever. But like, if it's a real tear, if it's like the thing that nobody wants it to be, like—
Which
it probably is, right. Then there's like, the track record of guys coming back from that is not great. Like, players do come back from it, but they come back at a diminished level. If I thought that would impact his market, I'd say get your $35 million and, you know, rehab. But it doesn't— it seems like he'll get some version of that amount of money anywhere. So I guess you may as well just like start your next contract.
He could lose an arm and a leg and the Knicks would still pay him.
Oh, yeah.
50%.
They'd be more inclined to pay him if without the arm, they were like, well, this is it. Like, now he's ready. He's angry. He's ready to play in New York.
I would be inclined to say that Durant would take the year to make his money and rehabilitate. But then again, I think he just wants to leave and he can just make that money elsewhere anyway. Mm-hmm. Cam Wolf, my colleague at GQ, said, my new Durant take is he definitely leaves now because he lost trust in the Golden State medical staff the same way Kawhi did in San Antonio. Ooh.
Yeah, that's a that actually is a decently compelling take. I mean, I have...
Yeah, you like that?
Yeah, it's sort of hard to know like what Kevin Durant's decision-making process is anyway. Like, the only real clues we have on it are like his appearances on Bill Simmons' podcast and then like the comments he leaves on other people's Instagram posts. Like, it's all kind of...
The burner account tells more than the
right, so it's opaque. But it does seem like it's important to him to get out of there. And whether that training staff has anything to do with it or not, like, I wouldn't necessarily be like, well, fuck that. I'm going to go see Jim Dolan's guys. They're the ones I trust, you know? It's all like Stephon Marbury's cousins, like looking at your knee and stuff. Like, I don't know.
I think it's a shame. Well, it's a shame they got hurt, obviously. I don't want anyone to get hurt. Yeah. But it is a shame that we're robbed of him next year in all likelihood. Because that would have been, there was, you know, not only is this the, you know, this is probably the end of the Warriors as we know them.
Mm-hmm.
And it would have been interesting to see how those chess pieces would have played out had they moved around to other parts of the league. Durant foremost among them. Kawhi himself can also move. So I was interested to see sort of how the league will be reshaped once this series is done. Even though the series itself is extremely compelling, it was, we're sort of on the cusp of an era where we won't have to watch the Warriors playing the finals every fucking
year. Yeah, it's weird though with the Warriors because like I'm not 100% prepared to say that it's over as soon as Durant leaves. I think it goes back to, you know, they have to stick with this core of players, but then they need to supplement it. And like, they really have, I mean, it's very difficult to do that. It's very difficult to build a core like that anyway. But like, Clay and Steph and Draymond Green have good years left. I think like Iguodala, Livingston, a lot of the lower down rotation guys are like closer to the end of the road. But
Clay could also leave.
Clay could leave. And it depends. I mean, if they – obviously, it's over if those guys decide to leave. I think if they decide to stay and they try to retool on the fly, like, I wouldn't rule them out for anything. I mean, just given what they've accomplished as a group that's together and with Kerr and all that stuff, like, it's just, like, it's hard to – this is what made, like, the Spurs run of success so amazing is that, like, it's really hard to, like, construct – a rotation that has like younger, less expensive players when you're picking 28th or 30th every year. And, you know, it's like for all that, like Jordan Bell and Kevon Looney and like, those are, you know, decent enough players and everything like that. But like at some point you start relying on them more than you'd want.
Yeah, I agree with that. I just want something new. I get bored.
Yeah, no, I'm with that. And I think also like stylistically, they've already made their mark on the game. And so like, it'll be interesting to see where that goes in the hands of like different players from here.
Let's take a break. But before we do, I want to treat you to this nugget from West Blankenship.
I love nuggets.
Channel 11 News in Atlanta. This is a quote he got from Dabo Swinney about when he recruits down Alabama. And I'm going to read this in a bad Southern accent.
Thank you.
Even though I don't know, actually don't remember what Dabo
said. Oh, he sounds like what you think he'd sound like.
I think it was all fun and games early on. It was like all in that sweet and all that stuff. But I don't know about Walls, but I'm kind of like Osama bin Dabo. I hate to navigate. What? I have to navigate my way through the caves and back channels to make my way through Alabama these days. They always happen to see me, but it's all good. It's a good problem.
Osama bin Dabo. Dabo.
Osama bin Dabo.
I don't care for it very much, Drew. I'm going to be honest with you. I don't like that phrase.
He's so insane, I could see him dressing up in Osama bin Laden gear and sliding down the giant Clemson slide in like a recruiting video being like...
What do you say? You ready to join me in Tora Bora?
Yeah. Welcome to the footballer band. You know, some shit like that. Let's take a break and come right back.
Hey, I'm Jamie.
And I'm Justina.
And we're the hosts of Just So You Know, a podcast where we get to the bottom of suspicious stories and outright lies we're being told by companies that profit off of animals.
You think Elon Musk is shady? Wait till you hear our episode about his sinister brain experiments.
First he ruined Twitter, now he's coming for your actual brain.
No.
We've also got one about that time I stormed the runway at New York Fashion Week to protest Coach's leather handbags.
Yeah, I heard they weren't happy about that.
I couldn't tell you. They're not talking to me at the moment.
And we're just getting started. In the coming weeks, we're going to blow the lid off of everything from shady pet dealers to monkeys held hostage by coconut milk companies to the astonishing secret behind the "no animals were harmed" message you see at the end of movies.
And so much more. We'll hope you join us for this surprisingly fun journey full of strange characters, secretive companies, and a whole world of stuff they really don't want you to know.
Subscribe to Just So You Know wherever you get your podcasts and look for our new episodes every Thursday. Just So You Know is a PETA production.
We're back. It's time to open up the fun bag. Are you ready, Roth?
Let's do it.
That was very, very
doing my best.
John writes in, when the hell did cauliflower become the new base carb in everything? Cauliflower crust pizza, cauliflower fries, riced cauliflower. I go into Trader Joe's and every other item is some cauliflower-based bullshit. I got handed to big cauliflower for seizing on market demand that big broccoli missed out on. But what gives? What's the deal, Roth?
It's weird. I've also noticed this. There's a cauliflower cracker you can get. It's like a Cheez-It, but the cracker's made of cauliflower. And it's not bad, but it definitely is not right. Like, there's something
it ain't a cracker,
really
though.
Uncanny about it. I like cauliflower. I like cooking with it. But it's always weird when that – just the idea of, like, a trendy vegetable – you know, and like, I can't even think of how many we've been through at this point, right? Like, kale is like a cliche by now, and cauliflower, it's good. It's not like the sort of thing where I wouldn't have thought it would be anybody's first choice. Like, the thing that looks like a brain, and you can cook it five different ways or whatever. But yeah, it's weird. I have to wonder if it's the sort of thing where it's going to like boom so hard that it busts out of necessity, that there's going to be like a global cauliflower shortage.
Oh, there will be. Yeah. There'll be, or you'll find out that, like, to grow one head of cauliflower, you know, California farmers have to use 8 million gallons of water.
Right. It's like the equivalent of Lake Superior every 36 hours. Anyway, like, we hope you enjoy this cauliflower-based lollipop that we invented.
I like cauliflower more than I did as a child, but I don't like foods that are fashioned into other foods. That's particularly true of vegetarian foods where it's like, apart from Impossible Burgers, which are supposed to be very good, but usually, like, in general, when you're trying to make faux meats and shit like that, or faux carbs out of vegetables, it ends poor.
Yeah, I think it's always kind of... I also think that, like, is, like, an outdated vision of what, like, vegetarians want. Because it, like, presumes that they wake up every day fiending for a fucking, like, a burger, like a medium-rare beef burger. And then they can't have it, and they deny themselves. And so what they really want is that, like... Is Impossible the one that, like, bleeds when you bite it?
Yeah, like Impossible and Beyond Meat and shit like that. They're supposed to be good like that.
See, that seems like, I mean, if they taste right and have the texture right, that's fine. But I think like there's a veggie burger in New York that like I actually, it's like the burger that I think about. I'm sure I've talked about it on here before, the Superiority Burger. And
oh yeah, that's famous.
And it's famous. It's great. It's like the dude who's like from the band Born Against who then like went to culinary school and like cooked it. They do interesting life. It's fantastic. And it has kind of like the texture of a burger a little bit, but it doesn't taste like one. It doesn't really like look like one. It just tastes good. And like it looks like it's like burger shaped, so you can eat it on a bun with like a piece of cheese and some ketchup on it. But it's not aping some meat shit. And I think that that's like, that seems to me what like actual vegetarians would or should want, as opposed to something that's like a, you know, whatever, a passable simulacrum of codfish.
Do they let you put bacon on it, or they have
no? They don't have any meat in the place.
That's right.
But yeah, which I respect.
I'm with you. Like I like vegetarian cuisine on its own, where it's like you don't have to eat like, you know, tofurkey or something when you could have like gnocchi sorrentino.
Yeah,
and there's no meat in that. You can just eat it. And
yeah,
be delightful.
All that shit's like vegan. My sister is vegetarian. I'm not, but I don't eat a ton of meat. Just because I'm married to somebody that doesn't. And my dad gets like upset if there's not some sort of meat related item in the thing that he's eating. They'll be like, well, where are you going to get your protein? And then like, you know, whatever. My wife will be like, well, actually beans are an excellent source of whatever. And he's just like, but not now. He's like, I need a chicken. like a whole chicken now. That's a man of his generation and whatnot, but it seems to me like you can do just as well with this stuff and probably whatever, feel fine about. Like a lot of the meats I don't eat anymore, it's like I don't ever get like pumped for chicken. Like, so I eat it like a few times a year, you know, like I like to eat fried chicken every now and then. But the idea of getting like Chinese food with like some sad flaps of chicken in it, it doesn't do shit for me. Like I'll just get it without.
What other meats do you no longer eat?
That's really the only one that I don't like make a priority. Like I eat a decent amount of pork. Like when I cook meat, that's like I'm using some cured Italian thing or sausage. Yeah. But all the stuff I used to cook for myself, I used to make like a pork tenderloin and like cook it and then like eat it all week and make sandwiches and whatnot. But that's like now that I have somebody, you know, that lives with me, that's like, oh, what part of the pig is that? I have to be like, I've just decided to remove that. And I like beef, but I hardly ever eat it. Is there, you haven't had to change your diet since brain injury.
No, I haven't. No, except, I mean, the alcohol thing.
Yes.
But that there's no meat in alcohol. Well, not with that attitude. by the way, I should note to stick with the NBA Finals theme, I have had cauliflower crust pizza. I had it at the home of one Guy Fieri.
What?
Yeah, his wife was making cauliflower crust pizza from scratch and offered me a slice, and I ate it, and I thought it was good. But would I, like, buy cauliflower crust and make my own pizza with it? I would not.
I can't even ding you on the name drop there because, like, that's just a very powerful one to have. He'd be like, well, I've only had it once, but it was at, you know the guy that wears all the rings? So he's yelling?
Right.
That guy was at his house.
As it so happens.
Right. Hats off.
He had a pizza oven in his fucking backyard.
That's
that went to like 40 million degrees. It's a nice thing to have in a backyard.
Yeah, that's the dream. That's like the one of the few like rich guy things where like I don't want like three fancy cars. I don't really even want one, just given where I live. But like, man, if I had a yard with a good pizza oven in it, like I know like Jimmy Kimmel has one too. Like that's tight to me. Like that I would 100% sign up for that.
That's baller shit. Let's take a break and come right back.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
We're back. Eric writes in, Roth, single knot or double knot? I always double up, and some of my friends think I'm a crazy person. Am I?
We're tying shoes now, right? We're not doing...
Yeah, you're tying shoes.
I become a double guy later in life.
Really?
Yeah. I think it's some of it is I used to have like different types of shoes, you know, that like... I don't even remember what I was just wearing, like just weird like New Balance shit. Nothing that I did in my 20s was actually a conscious choice. It was just like me sort of rolling around on the ground until like I had covered myself in clothes and shoes and could leave the house to go like buy more beer.
Yeah,
I wear like the same sneakers most days now, like the Chuck Taylors, and those have like, it seems like longer shoelaces. So instead of like stepping on my own shit constantly, I've become a double knot guy. I think single knots look a little bit more normal, but that's like, whatever the choice I've made. You seem surprised. Is that not how you operate?
No, I was surprised only because I think most guys tie the single knot tight enough so that it doesn't come loose. I am not one of those guys. I can tie it really tight and somehow my laces will become undone and then I curse and all
yeah.
that stuff.
For me, it's mostly about taking up the extra slack from tying it tightly.
I could see that. The only time I will tie a double knot is some like dress shoes have like slippery shoelaces. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I
mean?
Yeah,
there's like weird kind of useless, like waxy type stuff.
Yeah. They're like lacquered or some shit. And so, I can tie it as tight as I want as a single knot, but I already know it's like it's greased like a fucking pole.
Yeah, there's nothing that you could do to keep that from becoming untied. Like, they're built for that purpose. I don't know why. How that became, like, the norm, I'll never know.
And in fact, I have to tell you, because of my bad back, I have lace-up shoes, but I have pre-laced them so that I can slip them on like the laziest
Hell
asshole.
Hell yeah. That's like ancient school preppy shit. Like boat shoes with the little tied-off things on the end so you don't need to tighten them.
Pretty much.
I know, it's like this is more like a prescription shoelace situation, but that's still smart.
And so I will use double knots sometimes for those shoes just so the perma-knot can stay intact for as long as I need it to. So really, I arch an eyebrow at you hypocritically because I employ double knots with more free will than I anticipate.
I think it's just a reflection of this is, you know, how we are. You get older and you start being surprised by the fact that other people do things in a different way than you. But
yeah,
you know,
it's so
we're both valid here.
Has Donald Trump ever voted? Asked Jeffrey. Prospect of him standing in line in an elementary school gymnasium and taking instructions from an elderly volunteer is simply too far fetched to consider.
Yeah.
Has Donald Trump ever voted?
So he voted for himself. Has he voted for anybody else? I'm inclined to say no. Because you can't have like a private bespoke voting experience. Like even the neighborhood, do you remember the video from, I'm sure you do because everything that happened around that week in 2016 is seared in my brain, and I'm assuming in yours as well, where he was leaving having voted at some like polling station in Midtown West or whatever, near where the Trump Tower is. And somebody in line said to him, like, you're going to fucking lose. And he was like, oh, very rude. And like kind of kept it moving. But like, I think that like he still had to like walk by a bunch of people on a line on a rainy day.
Right.
And I don't think that that's an experience that he would deign to endure unless it was like his own election at stake.
See, I would agree with you, except, but one is absentee balloting.
Oh.
So I could see a lackey having him fill out an absentee ballot, particularly if there's some sort of local measure on there that was some sort of boondoggle that benefited him financially that he, in fact, might have lobbied
for. Yeah, that's like...
Like if New York had some new bylaw that said, like, real estate speculators don't have to pay any income tax at all and, in fact, get a subsidy of, like, 11 fresh corn cobs every day or something.
That's, like, definitely... That was, like, the whole of his political engagement was like him tweeting about like how like Obama was like not actually very good at basketball if you look at the, you know, the tapes or whatever. And then there's stuff like this, like anytime he like would have to testify or like would take out an ad or donate to anything, it was always trying to get some like Native American tribe in Connecticut like banned so that it wouldn't threaten his casinos. That's like the only thing that he's ever cared about. But like because our politics is the way that it is, like I guess you're right. That is kind of like there have been a lot of ballot measures on stuff like
that. You
don't
have time to answer this, but I'm good. This is from Tyler. This is an email of the week. My wife and I are living with our parents while building a house. Among the many, many reasons this is less than ideal is probably because our discovery that my father-in-law has a thing for erotic literature.
What?
How do we know this? Because the man has zero concept of protecting his screen. He'll hand me his iPad to show me some car thing, and the other tab will say mom, son, spring break, incest, taboo, literotica. Or he'll be sitting in the living room and the screen will clearly be all text except for a bright banner at the ad at the top of the page advertising 18 plus girls. My wife is understandably horrified and I take no small amount of pity on the old guy. However, it doesn't make it less awkward that he's constantly on his tablet with everyone in the room, my wife and I exchanging knowing glances.
Oh my God.
We're not sure if he's hiding it from my mother-in-law or if they have some sort of agreement where text is fine, just no videos. But either way, how the fuck do we get him to cut it out in shared spaces or at the very least protect his screen better? Do you have any advice for him? Keep it short, Roth.
Oh, God. Just destroy the iPad first and apologize second. That is really hardcore.
That sounds good. Forgiveness better than permission.
Yeah.
The show is produced by our executive director of audio, Manana Mafidi. Featured music by Corbin Hayes. The episode is mixed by Jamie Collazo. If you have a question you want to send us, send a voice note or email to deadcast@deadspin.com or tweet us using the hashtag deadcast. You can also find us at Apple Podcasts, Panoply, NPR One, or wherever else you get your podcasts. We'll see you next week. Bye, Roth.
Bye.